Welcome to Today's Issues. Join us for the next hour as we offer a Christian response to the issues of the day.
Welcome to Today's Issues on American Family Radio Network. My name is Walker Wildman, and I'm hosting today along with Fred Jackson. Fred, welcome to the studio.
Good morning. Good morning. You've been a busy guy on the road traveling.
Yeah, we were in North Carolina at Rockfish Church in Hope Mills, North Carolina, right outside of Fayetteville, North Carolina. We had an event two nights ago on Tuesday night, about 300 people there at least, maybe a little more than that.
Great.
Great turnout. We had a great night. Myself, Abraham Hamilton III, Wesley Wildman, my brother, Rob Chambers, Alex McFarlane. We were all there in right outside of Fayetteville, North Carolina. We had a great gathering, a lot of excited folks to be with us, and we were excited to be with them. And
great.
We talked about the election, talked about various issues our country is facing, and had a good turnout. Yeah. Speaking of that, we will be in Gainesville, Florida in a couple weeks. We'll be in October 1st. We'll be in Gainesville, Florida. It's a Thursday night. Mm-hmm. So go to afa.net. Go to our website, afa.net. And if you go to the events page, I'll find that real quick. If you click on, let's see, if you click on activism and the activism tab, and then there's an events link, and you can register there. Free of charge, just we want people to register so we know how many people are coming. Mm-hmm. Speaking of events and promotions, Fred, talk a little bit about One News Now, and we're doing a heavy push this week on the daily news brief.
Absolutely. One News Now, it's kind of the print version of what you hear on American Family Radio News each day. And we summarize all the stories, everything that's going on. It's one place to go. But what we're featuring this week is our daily news brief. And if you go to the top of the page, One News Now, there's a banner right there. You can click on that. And once a day, we will send you one email once a day that contains the top eight or nine stories that we're dealing with that day. It's a great summary of the major news events from our reporters, news from a Christian perspective. So click on that banner. Just fill out your name. Put your email address in there and click it away. And we will start sending you, it's a Monday through Friday, once a day, news brief. It's a great little tool for you and your family to use to get up on what the latest things are happening. You know, this is a busy time in our country. So much going on. We obviously, the election issues. And you want to hear about the election issues from a Christian perspective. Mm-hmm. And so you can get that news brief. Doesn't cost you a penny.
Nope.
Just we'll send it to you. So go to onenewsnow.com, up to the top of the page, click on that banner, and just it'll take you less than 30 seconds to fill that out, and we'll gladly get that news brief to you each day.
Yes, it's an excellent resource to know what's going on in our country. Also, one thing I like about One News Now is I have the daily podcast or the daily newscast downloaded on my phone in the form of a podcast. And so I can listen. If I'm having a busy day, I can listen to the end of the podcast for 4 or 5 minutes, catch a news roundup, and then I know what's going on. So you can also find the daily news brief, the One News Now daily news brief, in your podcast store on your Apple or Android device. And just type in AFR News, AFR News, and you'll find it there. You can download it or subscribe to it. Chris Woodward, welcome to the studio.
Thank you very much.
Go ahead and get us started on the news for today.
Yeah, well, one big story we're all watching is playing out in the Gulf states. Hurricane Sally made landfall earlier this week, of course, in the Gulf Shores area. Came in as a Category 2, and really what we're watching unfold today, and we'll be reporting on this throughout the day, is the amount of heavy rain and flooding that is occurring in states like Alabama, Florida, parts of Georgia, things like that. Sally did bring a lot of heavy rain, a lot of flooding, as I mentioned. It has been downgraded to a tropical depression, but a section of Pensacola Bay Bridge collapsed this week. We've had more than 550,000 businesses without power in the region. That number is probably going to go up. That's a lot of these things are initial numbers. One of the numbers being the number of casualties. At least one person has died, but that may go up too. What's interesting about this is that 16 years ago this week, we had another hurricane in pretty much the same exact spot, that being Hurricane Ivan. So Hurricane Sally and Hurricane Ivan have a little something in common. And, you know, certainly we'll need to continue to pray for the storm victims, but the government leaders and the first responders and business owners and all the folks in the region that are affected by Hurricane Sally.
Yeah, you mentioned the rain, the flooding. That storm, and some do this, others don't, others move fast, but mm-hmm. this storm, as I was just watching it on the radar every few days, it was just hovering
yep.
over yeah. the coast, moving at, what, 2 miles
couple,
an hour?
A couple of miles an hour, which... And that was the thing to worry about with this particular hurricane storm, was moving so slowly, dumping rain. And the rain amounts that were being talked about, we were talking about 30 inches of rain.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the ground gets soaked after about 5 inches of rain.
Mm-hmm.
So you add another 25 or 30 on top of that. Yeah. That's why the pictures you're seeing, not so much wind damage, mm-hmm. But they were strong in the initial point when it came ashore as a Cat 2. But now you're seeing the flooding. You know, it's up to the roofs of cars, that kind of thing. And as we've been saying all week, Walker, I know our good friends at 8 Days of Hope, Samaritan's Purse, and other organizations mm-hmm. are starting to think already, okay, how can we get in there and help these dear folks out? Because
sure.
this is going to, when you have a lot of rain like this, this is the sheetrock on the walls of houses
mm-hmm.
will all have to come out, that right. kind of
carpet.
Thing. Carpet, all of those sorts of things. So
yeah, this is where you appreciate some of the building codes, especially right on the coast mm. where you have to build the building up
yes.
several feet off of mm-hmm. sea level.
Yes.
That helps. I was looking at some pictures in Gulf Shores or Orange Beach area. And a lot of those condos are built up off the ground, so that's good for them,
mm-hmm.
but not everyone. Not all those houses. Some of them probably got grandfathered into the building codes,
mm-hmm.
and they're right there at ground level or sea level, so those likely flooded.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, we'll keep updating our listeners on that. We have several stations around the South Alabama
yes.
region. Mm-hmm. We're in, we cover Mobile with our Pascagoula station,
mm-hmm.
and have several other stations on the coast of Mississippi, so we'll... Keep an eye on that. What else you got, Chris?
Well, CNN is going to be hosting a town hall tonight with Democratic Party presidential nominee and former Vice President Joe Biden. This is scheduled for 8 p.m. Eastern in Biden's birthplace of Scranton, Pennsylvania, the Electric City. We can expect to hear a lot from Mr. Biden in terms of the coronavirus. He talked yesterday about a COVID vaccine and the efforts to try to get something there. He also... kind of joined the bandwagon again for a national mask mandate. Now, this summer in June, Biden told KDKA in Pittsburgh that he was in favor of doing an executive order, if elected, calling for a national mask mandate. In other words, forcing every state to have a mask mandate and that people in those states wear masks. Earlier this month, he kind of distanced himself from that situation, saying, well, we're not really sure we have the constitutional authority. For whatever reason, Biden determined yesterday that he does possibly have constitutional authority. And we know this based on a Q&A that he had with a reporter following that press conference he had in Delaware. We're going to do clip one here, Adam.
But what would happen if, say, a Republican governor pushed back on you on this? How do you get buy-in when it's become so politicized? Would you sign an executive order?
Well, the question is whether I have the legal authority as president to sign an executive order. We think we do, but I can't guarantee you that yet. Okay?
But if you did, you would.
If I did, I would.
Now, see, this is one of the things I enjoy about my job with American Family News and One News Now is because we take something like that and then we call somebody for what I call the yeah, but. And the yeah, but that I got yesterday is from Twyla Brace, a registered nurse and president of an organization called Citizens Council for Health Freedom. She told me she's opposed to mask mandates. Clip two.
When we think about the mask mandate, which is that the government has said that we must put a barrier between us and the air that we breathe, what the American public needs to understand that if they can do that, they can do anything in the name of public health. And so a mask mandate is a violation of the individual's right to breathe freely, to talk freely, and to engage freely in the public affairs of life. And so we feel like this is a major violation, and the fact that Joe Biden thinks that he could mandate it means that he doesn't really know what he's talking about, because indeed the federal government cannot mandate that the states require face masks or that the American public put on face masks.
I have a little bit more sound here, but let's pause for a moment and get your reaction.
Well, just because it's not legal doesn't mean they won't try it.
Yes.
And we've seen that with former administrations. They know something's not legal, and they still try it anyway. Why? Because they believe they can get it upheld in court. The main issue here is, you know, could a Biden administration do such an order? Maybe they might give it a shot. First, he's got to win the White House.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the more pressing issue is these governors that are doing it.
Yeah.
These governors that are doing statewide mask mandates that come with a penalty. To me, this is problematic because we are, I would argue, no longer in a pandemic, mm-hmm. no longer in a state of emergency. And we still have these all these regulations, not just masks, but all kind of other regulations. To me, that are concerning. And if we don't start to pull them back now, when are we going to pull them back? And the answer is never.
Fred? It's just amazing to me. Let's just say that if Joe Biden was elected and he tried this, as you point out, and I believe he would,
mm-hmm.
he would try it. So, number one, how do you enforce it? You can have penalties, but are you going to have police officers going out? Is it going to be a mandate that says, as soon as you leave the door of your house, you must have a mask on?
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I say that is because Joe Biden's been holding news conferences out in farmers' fields.
Right.
And he's sitting there with nobody around him with a mask on.
Yeah, in 90-degree heat.
Now, is this what he's talking about?
Right.
I mean, this doesn't even make medical sense,
right,
what he's doing.
Well, and also the left, the media, when President Trump tries to do things at the state level, like he was trying to influence governors to reopen their states several months back,
mm-hmm.
the left cries foul and says, remember, we have the 10th Amendment, states' rights. The president can't meddle around in the affairs of states, which is true. But when Joe Biden talks about a nationwide mask mandate and meddling around in state affairs, the media goes, I think that's a great idea.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a great idea. So it's more about what they like, the policies they like, and the agenda they like, as opposed to the Constitution. They just pull out the Constitution when it's convenient.
Yeah. The other piece of sound here, you mentioned governors and their mask mandates here. Fox News legal contributor Judge Napolitano, Andrew Napolitano, he talked about whether or not a president and a governor can enforce a mask mandate. Clip 3.
The president and President Trump knows he can't do it. I don't think he would even if he could. There's absolutely no legal authority in the Constitution for the president of the United States to tell you what to wear on your face. There isn't even a legal authority for the governors to tell you what to wear on your face. The governors can cajole, the governors can coerce, the governors can lead by example, the governors can suggest, the governors can mold opinion, but they can't order a mask. The president can do the same. He can set an example. He can wear the mask himself. He can talk about the safety aspects, the health aspects of a mask. But the power of law to force a human being to wear a mask at the federal or state level simply does not exist in the United States.
You know, this generally is where a liberal will have the knee-jerk reaction of, well, of course Fox News would say something like that. But Judge Napolitano has not exactly been a fan of President Trump. So I think that it adds a little bit of weight to what the argument he just made there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I just think it would be, number one, totally unenforceable.
Right.
You can't. We've already had sheriffs in various jurisdictions across the country saying, we are up here as sheriffs, as officers of the law, the word law there, we are here to uphold the law.
Right.
A governor's directive for somebody to do something is not the law.
Right.
Plain and simple.
Right.
And these sheriffs are saying, you can issue all these edicts you want, Mr. Governor,
mm-hmm.
but we are not going to enforce them. And do we really have the resources to go out somebody's walking down the road without a mask on. What are you going to do, arrest them?
Right.
For not having a mask on?
Yeah. I mean, we can't even arrest and prosecute rioters and looters and arsons.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Arsonists. So now we're going to start getting on to people and fining people who don't wear a mask. I think that's ridiculous.
But I think to go back to the original part of this story, and this is rather important, Joe Biden bouncing back and forth on this.
Yeah.
That tells me he is getting pressure once again from the far left of his party.
Sure.
Yeah. To go all the way on forcing people to do things that their particular ideology demands.
We think we have authority to do.
That also shows that he doesn't really have any core values himself.
Yeah.
Because it's more of what's convenient, what is everyone saying in the party, and that's what we're going to do.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing with shutting down businesses. At first he said, yeah, we'll shut them all back down when I become president, which is a hugely unpopular position. And then he started getting blowback, and he said, well, no, we're not going to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So I think he really doesn't know what he's going to do. It's just whatever his advisors say for that day.
Yeah.
Well, another election issue that we're watching involves the mail-in ballot issue. You know, we've had concerns now for weeks, it seems like, maybe more, on the possibility of voter fraud when it comes to mail-in ballots. Just a couple of examples this morning of mail-in mayhem, if you will. Vermont is now mailing ballots to every single voter in the Granite State, whether they want them or not. Then you've got this situation in Michigan where they've apparently sent incorrect ballots overseas printed with the wrong Republican running mate. In other words, Mike Pence is not the vice president running with President Trump, if you want to picture it that way. Then you've got this situation in New Jersey where you've had more than 1,600 unaccounted ballots were found in a mislabeled bin at the county elections board. And one of the groups that's pledging to do something about this and to help educate people on the concerns or the possibilities about voter fraud is an organization called True the Vote. And speaking this morning on Fox and Friends, Catherine Engelbrecht of True the Vote said she's launching an education campaign to help Americans identify and stop voter fraud. Clip four.
In the weeks ahead, we are going to be mobilizing a command center so that election workers and voters can come to us with questions. We are being overrun with concern, and rightfully so. We have to create an environment now where citizens can take to the field, and just like our president does, talks directly to the American people, that's what we want to do. Please join us now in working to create a free and fair process for everyone.
Well, this is going to be interesting. The next 6 weeks, and probably longer than that, is going to be interesting because we're doing something in some states, in many states, that hasn't been done before,
right,
and that is sending everyone ballots even if they don't ask for them. And we're also going to have interesting. Here's what the Democrats are going to do. Go ahead and mark my word. These various states have certain regulations in place that say after this many days after the election, we are done counting ballots. Some it's like 10 days, some it's 15. It varies, but that's around the number that you're going to get from various states. Here's what I believe the Democrats are going to try to do. I think they're going to say the Postal Service has problems, which is an admission, which is true. The Postal Service is having problems delivering mail on time. Thus, we need a judge to intervene and to move that deadline back.
Right.
We need to count ballots 30 days after the election. And who says we can't go out 45 days?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what they're going to try to do through the judicial branch because they can't pass laws that change these things. So they're going to try to do this through judges or through regulations. And it's just going to drag out, Fred, the vote counting process.
No question. And I think, you know, we've already been reporting that the Democrats are sending lawyers into every district in the country. I think the plan is that on election night, if President Trump has even a significant lead, it's going to be challenged in the courts. The kind of stuff that's going on, folks, there was a story earlier this week from the Associated Press, and you need to be aware of this. Election officials in Democrat-controlled Pennsylvania, they told folks that are in these districts, if they are getting ballots in where the signature of the individual does not match the signature on record, go ahead and count it anyway.
Hmm.
I mean, that's one of the proof in our courts that's used.
Yeah.
You know, right. That you have to, you check signatures. When you're getting a bank loan, they check previous signatures from the one that's on the bank loan. If it's not matching, you don't get the loan.
Yeah.
But there they are. They're being told that even if that signature does not match, you go ahead and count that.
Right.
This is the kind of stuff that's going on. Earlier this week, the Attorney General of Texas has put a court brief in dealing with what's going on in Houston. I think it's Harris County is in Texas, is Houston, Texas.
Yeah.
You got millions of people, 4 million people living in that. They are mailing ballots out to everybody. All right. When you do that, that just incredibly increases the potential for fraud. But I don't think the Democrats in general care about that. They're going to put it out there. They are going to do everything that they can to pull off an election win.
Yeah.
Or in the people's mind, use their friends in the mainstream media after election night to say, hey, listen, you know, there are millions of ballots out there that still need to be counted.
Right.
And to be fair and right, we have to, as you say, Walker, extend the counting time 30 days, whatever the case may be.
Yeah.
Watch for it, folks.
Yeah, there's one thing that I do want to equip our listeners with, and some of us have talked about this on the radio, but you can actually, our listeners can actually volunteer to work at the polls.
Mm-hmm.
And many of these positions actually get paid. It's not just a volunteer position, but you can actually get paid to work at the polling, at your local polling location. So we're going to post on the Today's Issues Facebook page a link to this. This is the U.S. Elections, the U.S. Election Assistance Commission. It's a government website, but they give you the information you need in order to sign up to work at your local poll. So we'll post that on Today's Issues Facebook page. I just sent that over to Adam to post there, and we'll you can find out more information about how you can work at the polls. And the more people we have working at the polls, people with integrity we have working at the polls, the more we can ensure voter fraud doesn't happen, at least at the local level. So check that out on the Today's Issues Facebook page.
Yeah, and it's real. I mean, we're not speculating here, folks. You heard Hillary Clinton back about 2 weeks ago telling Joe Biden, whatever happens on election night, do not concede.
Mm-hmm.
Do not concede. That is in their planning book right now. They are going to try to pull off whatever they can. And as you say, I know Sandy Rios has been talking to her audience about this too.
Yeah.
Volunteer to work at one of these election posts just to make sure, as you say, Walker, somebody of integrity is there to check what's going on.
Exactly. Chris, you got one more story for the break?
Yeah, I do, real quick. And I think this kind of ties in with whether or not you can vote in person. We've seen a number of stadiums now that are allowing people in to watch football games. In the news cycle today, USA Today reports that California Governor Gavin Newsom is close to reopening theme parks. Meanwhile, you can still go to Walmart, the liquor store, and all these other places, but people are saying you can't vote in person.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can vote in person. I just don't want you to.
Yeah, that's true.
That's right.
All right, Today's Issues, American Family Radio. We're going to take a quick break, and we'll be back. Make sure you check out our website, afr.net.
Frontier.
The music's free. I know we call it Learning University.
Of necessity.
Trivia Friday.
True.
Ding, ding, ding,
yes.
Ding, ding.
Oh, really?
That's correct. Giraffes do not have vocal cords.
So you want a cheeseburger without cheese.
Hold the...
I said, yes, ma'am, whatever you call it.
Take a break with Tim Wildman and the gang. Friday mornings at 10 Central on American Family Radio.
You know, folks asked me about our annual tour of Israel. Tim, is it safe to travel to Israel? To which I respond, we'll only be in New York for a few short hours. Hello, everyone. I'm Tim Wildman, president of American Family Association and American Family Radio. Israel is actually one of the safest places to be on earth because they take their security so seriously. So we're going to have a wonderful, safe time in Israel in March as we see the Holy Land. The Bible will come to life. Again, that's March 16th through the 24th. If you want the information to find out whether you want to go with us or not, just go to the website, twholyland.com, twholyland.com. If you want a brochure sent to your home, just call us at 800-FAMILIES and leave us your name and address, and we'll get that right in the mail to you. 800-FAMILIES.
Hello, Americans. I'm Todd Starnes with news and commentary next.
My goal as a teacher is to impart knowledge and then be able then for them to take it and turn it into wisdom. As we teach, I think, okay, 5 years down the road, how will the material that I am teaching them really affect their lives and their careers?
Hi, Todd Starnes here. Truett offers biblically centered degree programs. Check out truett.edu/starnes. Alejandro Villanueva is one of the few American Patriots left in the National Football League. You might remember that Villanueva is a former Army Ranger. He served 3 tours in Afghanistan, and he was the only Pittsburgh Steeler to stand on the field for the national anthem while his teammates cowered in the locker room. Mr. Villanueva is in the headlines again, this time over a name on the back of his football helmet. Players have posted the names of black men involved in police shootings, but Mr. Villanueva decided not to do that. Instead, he posted the name of an Army sergeant who died after trying to rescue soldiers from a burning car in Iraq. It was a noble gesture, one that clearly irritated the social justice warriors, who are now demanding Mr. Villanueva be publicly shamed for honoring a war hero. Be sure to listen to my daily radio show live noon to 3 Eastern or download my free podcast at toddstarnes.com. I'm Todd Starnes.
This is Today's Issues. Email your comments to comments@afr.net. Past broadcasts of Today's Issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at afr.net. Now, back to more of Today's Issues.
Welcome back to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Walker Wildman here, Fred Jackson, and Chris Woodward. We welcome to the line, as we do most weeks, Jan Markell of Olive Tree Ministries. Jan, welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me.
Jan, we wanted to transition to the topic of the deal that President Trump, along with Israel, UAE, and Iran, reached this week, or they reached it in weeks past, and they signed the formal agreement at the White House just a couple days ago. Mm-hmm. Fred, just give us a little, Fred or Chris, whichever one of you want to do this, give us a little backgrounder of this deal, a flyover, if you will, before
we
talk about it.
Yeah, there was a lot of pomp and pageantry at the White House. Hundreds of people gathered for the signing of this event. And I think basically there's an economic component to all of this. I understand in the case of the United Arab Emirates, one of the things that has happened is they changed their school books. They used to promote hatred against the Jewish people, and they changed their school books. So these are probably two nations, Bahrain and UAE, that kind of had informal, friendly relationships with Israel now for some time. Mm-hmm. There's also talk of other nations joining into this at some point, maybe even Saudi Arabia. Now, Jan, for the most part, there's been a welcoming of this event. A lot of people are hailing it as a huge step towards Middle East peace. And we wanted to get your take on all of this.
Sure. And much of what you summarized there, Fred, I would totally agree with. My own personal opinion, however, I'm going to take it a step further and suggest that there will never be peace in the Middle East until the Prince of Peace returns, mm-hmm. Jesus Christ returns, and establishes his kingdom out of Jerusalem. I guess we can try to make some efforts for it along the way. And you're absolutely right that the two nations involved this week already had friendly relations with Israel, and some of the forthcoming nations, such as Oman, and, well, we'll see about Saudi Arabia, also have pretty much friendly relations. In other words, they're not on a war footing. Mm-hmm. And when I start hearing that Iraq, which there are rumblings that Iraq might reach out in some form of peace treaty, agreement rather, or cooperation agreement, I'm pretty astounded. Since America got involved in Iraq, I don't think Iraq is a threat to Israel either. But I think what a lot of these nations have in common is all of them are terrified of Iran, and they just want to be in one accord over there to fend off this state sponsor of global terror, Iran, who would not blink before dropping atomic bombs on all of these major capitals of the Middle East. And so these countries are absolutely terrified. You know, is this going to lead to some kind of a end time significance? I don't believe this is the Daniel 9:27 covenant whatsoever, that the Antichrist is going to suck, because the Antichrist isn't here. I don't believe this is, it could be a precursor, I kind of doubt it, but you know, it's possible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know, when you read the Old Testament, Jan, there have been times when Israel was making peace with its neighbors, and that didn't work out too well, because there were always those tentacles there that caused Israel, the Jewish people, to compromise. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, when we talk, and the Palestinians, they're not happy with this. You've still got Hezbollah in the neighborhood. You still got Hamas in the neighborhood. Mm-hmm. So the idea that you're going to have Middle East peace, it's just not there.
Yeah, that's a very, very far-fetched.
Right.
Jan, let me ask you this. When you look at what President Trump's doing here, trying to bring these countries together on a more formal basis, at least when it comes to economics and trade and things like that, and just not infighting and terror like you see with Israel and the Palestinians and Iran, what do you think? What advice would you give, or what's your overall view of, is there anything that maybe the State Department and President Trump could do a little bit different when it comes to Israel?
I would have to give the president this is my humble opinion, an A rating on what he's done thus far with his relations with Israel, moving the embassy, declaring Golan Heights, et cetera, part of Israel. The next step, if I could just offer a clarification, the next step in the plan of the president, and now it's delayed, the next step was that Israel could annex these settlements on the West Bank. I believe it's 132 settlements that Israel, which are under Palestinian control, Palestinian mm-hmm. area control, mm-hmm. and Israel was going to be given the privilege of annexing that territory. That has now been set back to 2024. That makes me nervous. That makes me very nervous. Who's going to be president in 2024? It could be some radical leftist crazy, and if that were to be the case, say it's a President Kamala Harris in 2024. You think she's going to give any benefit to Israel in 2024 with those settlements, or anything to do with Israel?
Right.
So that troubles me. And if I could advise the president, and I've got people I know, Michelle Bachmann is advising the president as much as she can anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And her request would be, you know, stop meddling in the Middle East. Stop with all of these agreements in the Middle East. And I think the biggest problem with all of it, and I think Fred touched on it a minute ago, is they don't have a peace partner. If you think the Palestinians are going to agree to anything, that is delusion. They never will. Never, 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 ever.
Because of the spiritual aspect. I mean, the hatred runs too deep from a spiritual standpoint.
Correct.
For it to, for there to be peace.
The
best thing you can do is protect Israel. And I think that's what you're getting at, Jan, and not especially not giving up land. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're already cornered in with Iran, not too far away, and the Palestinians from the Gaza Strip and Hamas shooting missiles into Israel. So the last thing that's needed is for some for Israel to somehow enter some kind of agreement where they give up even more territory.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I agree. President Trump needs to seal that deal if you can, or get that land annexed before he's out of office, because we all know, looking through U.S. history, the chances of us having another president, even if it's a Republican or a conservative,
even if it's a Republican,
the chances of them having the fortitude to do such would be very unlikely.
Yeah,
so
that's right.
Better now than never.
That's the concern. And these settlements they're significant and they're important. But right now they've kind of been the sacrificial lamb in all of this, and I don't think that's good. But you know what, God is in control. He's got a plan. He got an end time plan for that part of the world.
Amen.
As a matter of fact, the entire end time plan revolves around that part of the world, and that's why we do need to pay attention.
Absolutely. Jan, before you go, I just want to get your reaction to results of a survey that came out this week, and this survey is done every couple of years,
mm-hmm.
and it says almost two-thirds of millennials and Gen Zers don't know that 6 million Jews were killed in the Holocaust.
Yeah.
I mean, that is absolutely incredible that nobody, these are especially the millennials, which goes up to 30-something years of age.
Mm-hmm.
That tells me in their schooling system, in their university system, in their churches, and sadly to say their mom and dads have never talked to them about 6 million Jews being executed. That's incredible.
Correct.
Mm-hmm.
I've actually done radio on that two or three times over the years, and it is. And I play sound clips of these young people being interviewed, asking them basic questions, just really basic questions, World War II and the Holocaust and the names of the camps and things like that. And the ignorance that comes back is simply overwhelming. But the root of it, and it's all those things you mentioned, but then there's been efforts to get the schools to teach this. And in the states, there's about a half a dozen states right now, because I haven't done a feature on this in at least 2 years. I don't recall the states. I think one might be New Jersey. Where they're teaching it, the kids could come back with an answer instantly. But where it's not being taught, and you're right, it doesn't have to be the schools. How about the home or the church? But if the schools are teaching it, then the kids come back and they do know their history. Otherwise, complete ignorance, yes.
Jan, your show is on American Family Radio each weekend. It's on Saturday and Sunday, I believe. 1 p.m. on Saturday and 12 on Sunday.
Yes, and we'll talk about the tide of our times here this weekend. I think, and we love our AFR listeners. We hear from them all the time, and I think they'll be informed by some of the things we're sharing this weekend on current events from a biblical perspective.
Excellent, Jan. Thanks for coming on today.
Thanks for having me.
All right. God bless. OliveTreeViews.org is Jan's website. OliveTreeViews with an S .org. Or you can go to AFR.net and find out when her show airs on Saturday and Sunday on American Family Radio. Chris, what else you got in the news?
Well, there is some positive news in the way of the jobs front. Every Thursday, we get a number from the government on the number of people that are filing for what's called first-time unemployment claims. And the good news here is that the number has been going down since March, when we had a reported 6.2 million people file for first-time unemployment claims. You guys might remember that getting a lot of headlines back then. But the number has been going down and down and down and down. And here we are today, where the number of initial jobless claims came in at 860,000. That still may sound like a lot, and it is. But the positive here is that it was less than last week when you had 893,000, and it actually came in below projections of 870,000. So if you want to think about it this way, fewer and fewer people are filing for first-time unemployment claims. And really, something else to consider is the fact that in our country, a number of jobs are dependent upon other jobs. So if the number keeps going down, your job security, in a way, kind of goes up depending on what industry that you guys are in.
Yeah, this is, our President Trump plays a very important role in the economy, as you can see with the policies that he implements. But I think what you're seeing here is the ripple effect from the shutdowns, because we had various governors and mayors just completely shutter businesses, and some of the businesses did it to themselves. They just shut down. A lot of it was a fear factor, and people don't want to spend money when they're nervous. That's why you get into the consumer confidence levels. How comfortable are consumers spending money? Do they feel safe? Do they feel like the economy is stable, or do they feel insecure? And they'll spend accordingly or not spend accordingly. But what you're seeing these numbers are really not going to shoot off and get back to pre-COVID levels for a long time. And here's why. There's various states that still have a lot of things shut down.
Right.
Mm-hmm. You look out in California.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Nancy Pelosi went and got her hair done a few weeks ago, but up until last week, the salons were still shut down. I mean, not able to cut anyone's hair.
Mm-hmm.
And then, New York, I know y'all probably saw the letter where you had over 150 business owners in New York City petition de Blasio last week to open things back up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, these people are struggling and they're going bankrupt in many scenarios. So until we have governors that stop the edicts and stop the overregulation strangling businesses, then there's no way we're going to be able to get back to pre-COVID levels of employment and economic activity.
Yeah.
Well, I'm amazed that it is this low, because we're coming through and we're getting to the end of the tourism season.
Mm-hmm.
Now, a lot of folks decided not to travel this year because so many states where they might usually go were shut down.
Mm-hmm.
The hotels were shut down
or
limited capacity, restaurants to 25% capacity. Do you really want to go to an area where you're on vacation and there's nothing open?
Sure, right.
I mean, why would you want to do that? So they're electing to stay at home
and
spend a little extra money getting stuff on Amazon.
Right.
So it's amazing that we've come back, because at one point initially, and correct me if I'm wrong, Chris, there was something like 22 million people unemployed in the early days of the pandemic.
Right. Yeah, and
there's been a remarkable recovery despite the restrictions that we still see across the country.
Right, Two things to mention here. We have a lot of people still unemployed, but as Fred said, it has gone down there. President Trump maintains that the number for third quarter GDP is going to be great. It's going to be a very positive number. It's going to look like things are coming back on track. That's an interesting number that we all should watch, because the number for third quarter GDP just happens to be scheduled for release just a few days before the November election. Its release has absolutely nothing to do with Election Day. That's just when it's scheduled to come out. But that will give us an idea of where the economy is. The bigger the number is for GDP, the stronger the economy is. So if we get a really gangbuster number, that shows that things are getting back on track. And earlier this week, something I don't believe we've talked about on this program, but earlier this week, there were news articles out about the Census Bureau showing that people's incomes were up, jobs were doing well, hourly wages, all these things were doing great before COVID-19, which adds weight to the Trump administration's argument that the economy was doing great prior to all this coming up. The other thing that I wanted to mention here, and I think this is part of the reason why people are so freaked out about the pandemic and how bad it is or how bad it was or whatever, the Associated Press and other news outlets oftentimes blame the economic problems on what they call, quote, the COVID-19 pandemic. I think it should be worded as the COVID-19 pandemic and the government's response to the coronavirus, because as Walker just pointed out, a number of state and local officials just shut everything down, whether or not it was needed.
Right.
And as a result, a lot of people lost their jobs, and other people lost their jobs as a result of those unemployment filings based on some government official.
Yeah, you're talking about, I'm not an economist, but just looking at where we are compared to before COVID, and things are getting better, generally speaking. As Fred said, these numbers could be much higher, but you're talking probably a year or two from now, not from 6 months ago. You're talking probably 12 to 24 months minimum till you can start getting back up to where we were pre-COVID. And I hate to say that, but that's just, you're talking about airline travel, mm-hmm. talking about hotels, all these, and this COVID has changed the way a lot of people travel mm-hmm. and work too. So there's going to be lasting impacts there. Now, usually when one industry is affected, another one benefits. So you have that. So maybe it's just shifting jobs to another industry, like order fulfillment, mm-hmm. you know, parcel shipping and things like that. But we'll just keep an eye on that, Chris.
Yeah. There's another interesting thing, too. From time to time, you come across kind of positive stories through all this coronavirus stuff. One of them, I actually came across this on CNN this morning as part of their Things You Need to Know Today. But apparently one of the things where we're seeing an uptick in business involves people that sell what's known as ugly produce. Now, there is a brand of tomatoes called Ugly Tomatoes. But what we're talking about here are fruits and vegetables that are not exactly pretty. And sometimes people look at fruits and vegetables and they're like, well, that doesn't really look good. It probably doesn't taste good. And therefore, they don't buy it. But somebody has seized on this. There's one company, and this is just one example, but there's a company called Imperfect Foods that's selling ugly fruits and vegetables, ugly produce. And their shtick is, the selling point is that, hey, it's cheaper and it's just as healthy. It's what's on the inside that counts. But coincidentally, we ran a story, this has been a few months ago, it was a dairy farmer somewhere in the United States that realized, hey, all the schools and universities that I've been selling milk to are closed. I'm just going to start a milk delivery route.
Wow.
There you go.
Yeah, let's go back 50 years on that
yeah.
one.
Yeah. I mean, you know, he took some lemons and made some really good lemonade. And these other people are finding, hey, there's a market out here. I mean, why let an ugly tomato or ugly head of lettuce go to waste? People are hungry. Let me sell it to you.
This, you know, I didn't realize how fragile our supply system was until COVID hit because I know we had a beef shortage a little bit there mm-hmm. for a few
yeah.
weeks,
mm-hmm.
and it wasn't because there wasn't enough cows or there wasn't enough people to eat the hamburgers or the steaks or whatever, and it was because the meat processing facilities were shut down.
Mm-hmm.
And this exposed really a weakness in our system, and that the USDA, this may even get into the FDA too, but they heavily regulate the meat processing,
mm-hmm.
meat processing, that the supply chain there. And in many circumstances, you can't go direct to consumer. For example, you can't, in many circumstances, you can't go, raise your own cattle, your own beef,
mm-hmm.
Slaughter it, process it, and then in the same town, take it to restaurants. There's more involved there, and I don't know all the ins and outs.
Yeah.
But Congressman Thomas Massey from, I think he's from Kentucky,
mm-hmm.
but he's a Republican, and he introduced a legislation to, I forgot what he called it, but it was a bill that would cut out the middleman, if you will, cut out the processors and allow people who raise cattle to go straight to consumer, which would address your point, Chris.
Yeah. Yeah, it's been a very and again, it brings us back to what I was saying here, the government's response to the pandemic. But there have been people that have tried to respond to this. And, you know, South Dakota's governor has been one of the few examples of, look, we're not going to shut it down.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to try to help these people or whatnot. I think, too, the food shortage brings up a couple of things. Some people, for whatever reason, have been programmed to believe that we have to have, you know, your supper or dinner, depending on where you are in the country, has to be a meat and two vegetables and a grain and, you know, water, tea, lemonade, whatever else. Like, there was a day and time where you got a bowl of peas and cornbread and you called it a day and you were happy to have it. We think we're starving if we don't have what's on the little diagram that the government tells us to eat.
Or if we miss one meal. This legislation I'm talking about is called the Prime Act.
Yes.
And Thomas Massey from Kentucky authored it. And what it does is, one of the key problems that he says here is that federal regulations, federal inspection requirements, don't allow smaller processing facilities, local slaughterhouses, to package meat for consumers. Instead, it has to go to these federal-approved processing inspection facilities, which gets things in a logjam. So, anyway, that's the legislation
you know,
I was talking about.
We should be allowed to go down to Farmer John's place, and if it's the fall and he's culling his herd,
yeah,
that I can buy a side of beef.
Right. You would think.
And
it's
take
America.
And take it home.
Yeah.
You would think.
There was a day you could do that.
Sure. Well, exactly. Yeah. And why not? I mean, Americans survived that way for a long, long time.
Sure.
But somebody came along and said, no, we need another step in the process here.
Yeah.
We need these inspectors coming in. And, you know, boy, if they find one speck of dirt on the floor somewhere.
Shut it down.
Yeah, and I get the inspection process, but we were in a situation where people were having to waste beef because of the big processing facilities were shut down or didn't have enough staff. So you would think even in an emergency, in an economic emergency like that, or COVID, that they would have made an exemption to allow the smaller slaughterhouses to handle that, but they did not. But thankfully, we got the beef back on the grocery store shelves now.
Amen. Yeah.
Hey, one other thing I wanted to mention, and this will impact the economy, is the Big Ten announced this week they were going to resume football. Now, the Big Ten was quick to say, we're not going to do football or any sports because of COVID-19. And then after they saw some other conferences start football season and have a good time, they decided they, too, were going to get in on the fun. So here's how it works. The Big Ten, which means Ohio State, Michigan, Indiana, those kinds of schools and universities, are going to start playing football next month. I believe it's on the 24th. They plan to do 8 games in 8 weeks. They're going to follow very strict guidelines and whatnot. The reason I bring this up as an economic story is because back in August, Ohio State University, there were news reports in which the athletic department there in Columbus had estimated they were going to lose $130 million just by not having some sports in the fall. And you kind of think, what does that mean if a college doesn't have a football season? That impacts a lot of towns. And it impacts a lot of people that work in the food service industry, gas station operators.
Those are jobs.
Hotels, yes. Jobs that buy stuff that other people depend on and their jobs depend on.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So I know people are like, oh, it's football. It's just a game. That is somebody's livelihood.
Sure. That's a part of the economy.
That's why the sports
industry is a huge part of the economy.
And there's a lot of people in journalism, a lot of sports writers, ESPN, USA Today, a lot of them, and granted, some of them are paid to write these things and cause controversies, but a lot of people have been dumping on this, saying it's risking lives.
Yeah, that's ridiculous. No, I saw the numbers the other day. The first few weeks of colleges reopening, it was like the top 15 to 20 universities in the country had a total of 25,000 coronavirus cases, zero hospitalizations. Yeah. These college football players are some of the healthiest students.
Right.
So there's no reason they can't play football. And wearing face shields on the sidelines and masks on the sidelines is ridiculous.
Yeah.
They're sweating and spitting on each other playing football, and they're on the sidelines wearing a medical visor.
Right.
Gotta be kidding me. Today's issues, American Family Radio. Thanks, Chris.
Thank you.
All right, Fred, and I'll be back in a few minutes with Steve Jordahl and more news of the day.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.